stay tuned for Back of the Book that comes up now. 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and WBAI.org on the internet. It is 5 o'clock and time for Back of the Book.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all Late Winter is Upon Us Radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And you can find out a little bit more about what we're going to talk about here by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of that frame, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. And you can click on that and you'll get to the webpage for tonight's program. And we do a separate webpage for each and every program. And the WBAI website and the archives seem to be functioning. This is our 79th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The big news of the past week is that on Twitter, we have rocketed back up to 119 followers again. Ah, we dropped a couple, but we got a couple back. Oh boy, we're at 119 followers, and it's made headlines all over the world. The next WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, March 9th, 2022 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And we had a meeting on February 9th, and we elected people to some things, and we had to vote to change the Articles of Incorporation of Pacifica so that we can be tax-exempt from things, including from property taxes in California. In New York City, we ain't got no stinking property, so we don't worry about that crap. But in California, they have a whole bunch of real estate. So, yeah, they had a problem with that, and this will fix it. And according to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 421,113,096 on Friday, and global deaths reached 5,871,258. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 78,351,465, and the death toll in America was 933,513. So 16,070 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. This week's death rate is a bit lower than last week. It's still a huge number of deaths every week. The pandemic is not over. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. Again, this was all mostly preventable 2 years ago. On our last program, we talked about 4,000 city workers who were facing termination of their jobs over their refusal to get vaccinated against COVID-19. And that was a Mayor de Blasio mandate. And when Mayor Adams took office, he said he didn't force that mandate. So it's being reported now that last Friday, after we were done recording the radio program for airing on Saturday morning, 1,430 municipal workers got fired from their jobs for not getting vaccinated. Apparently, this means that among the 4,000 unvaccinated city workers, there was a sudden last-minute rush to get the injection. So 2,570 city workers decided to keep their jobs. The New York City municipal workforce has about 375,000 people in it, so the 1,430 refuseniks is not a large percentage of the workforce. It's 0.38%. And, of course, unvaccinated people are much more likely to die from COVID-19 than vaccinated people are. And more than 540 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines have been administered in the United States, and serious side effects are very rare. And yes, more and more people are getting PO'd at the anti-vaxxers who not only are endangering everybody else by refusing to get vaccinated, but who then do nasty things about it, harass people, shut down museums and libraries because they demand that, you know, you got to wear a mask to be in there. And anti-vaxxers get violent. And, oh, of course, there's something going on up north that has also been very anti-vaxxer, anti-masker stuff. And here's somebody to talk about it, our own Pickles of the North.
Things are going better across the border. And finally, things are getting shut down. Yes, the big so-called freedom convoy that's been happening in places across Canada has been pretty much shut down. I am happy to report. Prime Minister Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act, which gives police expanded powers in dealing with the public, which means that the truckers have been arrested for not moving their trucks. Boy, they actually had to smash one window and pull a trucker out through it who refused to leave. Good. It enables the government to allow banks to freeze people's bank accounts. People can lose their insurance for their trucks. So this has been what they've been reduced to get rid of these insurrectionists. And they are insurrectionists. You know, this is Canada's long insurrection. Since it's been going on for over 3 weeks now. And the majority of Canadians support the Emergencies Act being enacted. This reminds me a lot of, oh boy, back in 1970, when the precursor to this act, the War Measures Act, was enacted by Prime Minister Trudeau's father, P. Pierre Elliott Trudeau. And that was during the October crisis in Quebec, when the deputy premier of Quebec, a premier is the equivalent of a governor in Canada, so was kidnapped. And also a British diplomat was kidnapped by the Front de Libération de Quebec, which was a terrorist organization in Canada. Yes, through my childhood, they set off bombs. They set off bombs all over the place in Montreal. It was just quite lovely. And we had a bunch of family members, the French side, who supported this, their big action, you know. You got free Quebec, whatever. Anyway, so that was the last time this kind of act was invoked. And it is not the best thing to do because it takes away people's civil liberties, basically the right of habeas corpus. But in this instance, it's being used in a very limited way for 30 days for the specific situations of the people who are shutting down the borders and occupying Ottawa. The borders are open now, and Ottawa is being liberated, I guess one could say. So that's my report on what's been going on there. And this has very little to do with the pandemic and a lot to do with fringe violent groups who've decided to get together and act out.
Yeah, it should be noted, of course, that Canada is different from the United States. Besides having a different history and a different makeup, the United States has certain freedoms written down, and that's it. It's supposed to be pretty close to absolute. Whereas in Canada, they can just say, okay, we're going to suspend civil rights and do things this way. And they can do that, and it's perfectly legal in Canada.
Well, you do have to have the approval of Parliament, which was supposed to happen Friday, but since they were having this big surge of police, from law enforcement from across Canada, to stop what's been going on there, they decided it was not prudent to have Parliament meet. They're going to meet today, Saturday, so... And again, the majority of Canadians support this, much the way the majority of Canadians, both English and French, supported what happened with the War Measures Act back in 1970. So people don't like to have violence on their doorsteps. You know, there's a big difference between protest and people getting together to screw around and do whatever the hell they want and treat other people verbally and physically with violence. So good riddance to bad cess.
Oh my. And as we're here recording on Friday, Russia has not yet invaded Ukraine, but they keep saying it's an imminent kind of a thing. What's happening here is that Putin gets to determine whether or if or when he invades. And it certainly looks like he wants to invade, but it's been really jammed back and forth, and there is a war of information going back and forth between the United States, NATO, and Russia, the former Soviet Empire, now the Russian Empire again. And so what's happening is we don't know what's going to happen. Putin is getting the attention he wants. Clearly he wants attention. One of the things, though, that's come out about him is that he is unbelievably wealthy. He has a value of over $200 billion personally. And so, you know, rich guys can be very vulnerable on certain things. And so, yeah, they might just decide to threaten to do things that will mess up his personal wealth. Now, how that would work would depend on Putin's ego. He's got a pretty big ego, but would he say, well, okay, They've reduced my amount of money that I have down to like $10 billion and say, but that's so much money. I can't spend even that anymore, you know, in my lifetime. So he'd just say, well, okay, I'll accept getting hit in the pocketbook. Would he do that or would he be clinging to it? No, I can't lose a penny or a ruble. And so, you know, it's a question there. I mean, can they use his personal weaknesses against him in that way? That's a question. And, of course, we've got various people marching around saying, you know, America, stop bullying Russia. Idiots! And really. As if they don't already have the example of Crimea and the eastern part of Ukraine to serve as, yeah, Russia goes in and grabs parts of Ukraine when it feels like it. Why wouldn't they do it yet again? So, you know, people, I think a lot of what happens sometimes is that some of this goes back to the old commies of the 30s when you had, you know, people saying, yes, Joseph Stalin is the people's wonderful guy. And, oh, boy, they were very much against Britain and everybody who was fighting the Nazis for the first part of World War II. And, yeah, I mean, from September of 39 until June of June 21st of 41, yeah, the Soviet Union and the Third Reich were allies. In fact, the Soviet Union was really the major supplier of fuel and war materials to Nazi Germany, and all the Communist Party USA people were, yes, we support Comrade Stalin and the liberation. And they made up all the usual insane excuses for Hitler, and including things about how, the Soviet Union moved in on Poland to protect it. You know, and then, of course, after the war, documents are captured and you find the Hitler-Stalin Pact of 1939, which helped to start World War II, was really very formal about starting World War II with the two of them. And it said, we will both go in here. That marked out what parts of Poland the Nazis would invade and what part of Poland the commies would invade. And, yeah, so we still have some of that, I think. I think there are some old relic thought processes going on among certain leftoids, in America at least, and they can't let go of their anti-Americanism. And, of course, when it comes to Russia, well, there are still these residences of Comrade Stalin there. And so, yeah, they're gonna march against the awful American stuff of saying, don't invade Ukraine, and say nothing at all about the two other invasions that Russia has done, and the fact that they have massed 150,000 troops surrounding Ukraine. But, oh well, that's life, I guess. We'll see if there's an invasion this week or if Putin decides to play this as a nice publicity thing for himself. Who knows how this will work out? It could just end up being Putin's ego trip, or it could end up being a war. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. And all sorts of people are doing things like, oh, burning books, banning books, and saying what you can say in a classroom. And, oh, it isn't just so-called critical race theory that people are trying to ban in classrooms. There's also other stuff going on, and it really, in one case, exposes the extreme ignorance of some of these people who are censoring things. Right-wing politician Wren Williams, who's a real Trump follower, has filed legislation to restrict what can be taught in Virginia schools. His bill cites the debate between Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass as acceptable curriculum material that does not promote the, quote, divisive concepts, unquote. Of course, Lincoln never debated Frederick Douglass. Lincoln debated Senator Stephen Douglass in the 1858 Senate race. Frederick Douglass was, of course, a freed slave who was really campaigning against slavery and made quite a big impression. And the right-wing people who want to run everyone else's lives aren't even educated about history. In 2017, Trump was talking about Frederick Douglass as, quote, an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, unquote. The idiot Trump thought Frederick Douglass was still alive. And Trump made that comment at an event kicking off Black History Month that year. Welcome to late winter. In the wee hours of Friday morning, during that big rainstorm, we entered late winter. Yes, at 2:42 a.m. yesterday morning, we entered the final third of winter. Yeah, yesterday being Friday, although as we record this on Friday, it's earlier today, and yeah, that can be confusing. And things should start getting better pretty soon. The end of the miserable third is near. Yeah, I call it the miserable third. The months of November, December, January, and February. It's the miserable third of the year. And then we have the middle third of the year, which consists of the months of May, June, July, and August, which I really like. That's my favorite time of the year. It's lots of sunlight. It's warm. Oh, boy. So I like the middle third. I don't like the miserable third.
Some of us quite enjoy your so-called miserable third.
That's because you like it cold. Anyway, we have a program scheduled next month that will be on the last full day of the winter of 2021-2022. And then spring, tra-la, and the daylight will be longer than the night dark. This is the long President's Day weekend. I'm hoping that sometime in the next couple of President's Days that we'll see the first former President of the United States behind bars. A New York judge has ordered the former president and his two children to testify within 21 days in a long-running state civil investigation into his shady business practices. Donnie Bonespur Trump is, of course, displeased. Did he really think he would win that lawsuit? I suspect that he's just trying to run out the clock and drag his prosecutions out. He hopes that the Republicans will regain a majority in the House and Senate, and he'll be able to get support there, and he may even be hoping to run for president in 2024 and win, or have some crony run and win, and then they'll have a lot of leverage to stop any federal litigation, and they'll probably be able to destroy a lot of evidence. And he may be holding out hopes that a federal advantage would be able to quash New York State legal actions. I don't know about that, but they could certainly run interference. In any event, the twice-impeached disgrace on the presidency has said that the probes into his business practices are an, quote, unconstitutional witch hunt, unquote. And then, in an email he wrote, quote, the people will not allow this travesty of justice to happen, unquote. I think a whole lot of people are going to be very glad to see him getting deposed and put on trial. And I'm probably not alone in hoping to see him convicted of at least some of his crimes and be the first former president of the United States to go to prison. Trump has also said, quote, remember, I can't get a fair hearing in New York because of the hatred of me by judges and the judiciary, unquote. And then he added, quote, "It's not possible," unquote. Then he says in all caps, quote, "There is no case," unquote. I think there's a case, all right. He will probably take the Fifth Amendment a number of times. He may take the Fifth for every question asked. In 1990, when Trump was being deposed as a part of one of his divorces, he took the Fifth 97 times. He may need to break that personal record for the upcoming depositions. And just to show that sanity is not something he values highly, Trump is now accusing Hillary Clinton of, quote, "breaking into the White House, my apartment, and buildings I own," unquote. Oh, that's pathetic. Really, now he's trying to bring her up as somebody who's breaking into his place. Wow, geez. Of course, we all know that crooked business practices weren't the only crimes Trump has committed. You remember those 15 boxes of White House records that Trump had to cough up and which were stored at his Mar-a-Lago joint? Well, the National Archives and Records Administration said that among those records were items marked as classified. Classified national security information. Well, that's a violation. Other people have gone to prison for doing exactly that sort of thing. And the National Archives and Records Administration also said that certain of Trump's social media records were not captured and preserved by the Trump administration. And that is a required thing. And the agency also learned that White House staff frequently conducted official business using unofficial messaging accounts and personal phones, and they did not copy or forward that stuff to their official messaging accounts, which is required by the Presidential Records Act. And it has been widely reported for years that Trump had a habit in the office of tearing up records both, quote, "sensitive and mundane," unquote. There are apparently plenty of witnesses to that behavior, and that's illegal. The Presidential Records Act was enacted in 1978 after former President Richard M. Nixon wanted to destroy documents related to the Watergate scandal. Oh, boy. The law mandates that presidential records are the property of the United States government and don't belong to the president himself, which is something that Donnie Bonespur Trump just can't understand, I think. In a personal note, my father would have been 99 years old this past week. And it's interesting to think about that. My father would have been 99 years old. And, well, he didn't make it. He didn't get out of the 20th century. But, Pickles and I had been together for mere months. And, you know, it was, she was still making up her mind, I think, because, let's just say there are things about me that are not too standard. And she was saying, what the hell's with this guy? In any event, she was around when my father passed away. And she and I went over and, because the police called up and they were in there. And Pickles actually met my mother, was able to sort of sit there with her because my mother had Alzheimer's and was convinced that I was some nefarious guy from the doctor who had delivered me. And so she was, very hostile to me and would even get violent within mere minutes. She would work herself up and get violent, and she was in bad shape, and that wasn't good for her. But Pickles was just this woman she'd never seen before, and Pickles is not exactly the most threatening presence. And so she sat down, and they were able to talk to each other, and Pickles was able to keep her pretty calm, and, various things got done that night. And, but I'm also thinking about in another few months, my mother would have been 100.
Wow.
At the end of May, my mother would have been 100 years old. And I had an uncle, my Uncle Larry, who at this point would be pushing 101 because he was born in 1921. They were all born in the early 20s there. So here we are in the early 20s, and it's sort of odd to think that my parents and my uncle and these people I saw would be centenarians now if they were still alive. It's, tells me how old I am. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. We've all seen the stuff about droughts out in the West and all. Well, there's what's being called a mega drought happening in the western part of this country because it's so big, it's so widespread, and it's so long-lived. A new study published in the journal Nature Climate Change finds that this drought, or mega drought, which began in the year 2000, is the worst one in 1,200 years. That's 1,200 years. It's the worst drought. And scientists say that it's likely to continue. They say that the summer of 2021 was really bad, and about two-thirds of the western North America was in extreme drought. A. Park Williams, a climate scientist at the University of California, Los Angeles, said that this, quote, really pushed it over the top, unquote. Dr. Williams did an analysis using tree ring data to gauge drought, and this has turned out to be a really useful tool, dendritology or something it's called, and they count the tree rings. And because it records things like, you know, if there's more water, it's got a wider tree ring. If there's less water, it has a narrower tree ring. And there are trees all over the place, and you can go from current trees, and you know when you cut down a tree now, you know when it's cut down, and you can trace the years on it. In fact, I did a similar thing when we were in Prospect Park years ago, Pickles and I, and we were looking around in there, and they had cut down one of the old trees. And I said, oh, I'm going to count the rings. And I did it. And I went in and I counted the rings. And turned out the tree had been planted in something like 1858 or something. It started growing. I don't know if it was planted at that point in time. I don't think Frederick Law Olmsted had come in to do it yet. So it might have been a very natural tree growing right there. And the thing is that you then, you know, see how far back a tree goes, then you find another tree, and then you can find things like fossilized trees, and you, when you see a pattern that matches a pattern of something you've already done, that allows you to go back, and you can count back thousands of years using patterns of tree rings. And so this is an amazing thing people hadn't thought of before, and they thought of it, you know, some decades before. Ago now, but it's interesting that they can do it this way, and you know, it really works out, and it's especially useful for saying if there's been a drought or not, because that really shows up in a tree ring. As a result of his research, the years 2000 to 2021, they're the driest 22-year period since the year 800 of the current era, which is as far back as the data goes. And, geez, that's pretty far back. That is 1,200 years ago. I wonder when the climate change deniers will finally admit that the climate is changing. I mean, what more do they need? And it's and a lot of them are out in the western states there. A lot of red states are being affected by this, and they just can't decide that they, you know, I think it's stubbornness by now. I think they realize, yeah, climate change is happening and it's bad news for us. But I think what's happening is they're saying, oh, no, I can't admit I was wrong. And that's what's going on because, geez, what more would they need? They're getting it. You know, we a 1,000-mile storm was a big deal at one time. Now we get them on a weekly basis. And we also here and there get a 2,000-mile long storm. And the storms are indeed more fierce than they used to be. The winds are higher. And this is, of course, a result of a warmer atmosphere. Again, it's kinetic energy. And the kinetic energy can either be very random, where the molecules of air bang against each other, and that makes for a higher temperature, or a lot of the molecules of air can go in one direction, and that makes for a wind, and the wind is higher. The speed of the wind is higher because they have more energy. So, God, you know, I don't know. I think it's a thing of we're going to have to wait for a lot of these old idiots to drop dead before anybody does anything about this stuff. Some people are doing stuff about it, but before we see the end of this insane resistance to what is flagrantly obvious. And, of course, we have our mayor who's still pretty new, Mayor Adams, and, well, he's not making some good choices in some situations. Mayor Adams is considering an anti-gay ex-New York City councilman named Fernando Cabrera for a, quote, faith-based post in the city government. This creep, Cabrera, he actually went to Uganda in 2014 and was praising the government there for its anti-gay bigotry, where, you know, they were talking about murdering gay people. And this guy was, oh, this is so good at stopping that. And man, you know, this is somebody who's in this faith-based post, whatever the hell it is, that Adams is going to put together. You know, Adams has a lot of connections to some shady characters, and I don't know, on the surface, he might be a rather corrupt guy. We might have ourselves a rather corrupt mayor right here. I guess we'll find out as time goes along, but there's certainly reason to think that he's doing some bad stuff and he's really associating himself with some bad people. And there's also a guy named Eric Salgado. He's an anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage sky pilot. And he ran for mayor and, you know, didn't get anywhere. Because if you're anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage, you know, you're going to get a lot of people against you right away. And so this Eric Salgado character has now been appointed by Adams to be assistant commissioner at the mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs. So immigrants who are gay are going to have a problem, I think. And this is not a good thing. This is a bad guy. And what is Mayor Adams doing here? Is he, like, you know, just unable to see what he's doing? Does he not get that people are going to say, this isn't good? And various, I just knocked over a pencil. I have my pencils with me. And, Adams is getting some pushback from various gay activists in the city. And, this one guy who went to Uganda, this Cabrera guy, he hasn't appointed him to anything yet. He says he's going to do it to some faith-based thing, which is a way of taking somebody who can't really do anything and giving him a job that doesn't require him to do anything, but it's like a political payoff. So he's talking about that guy. But this other guy, Salgado, he has this job. If you're a gay or lesbian or bisexual or trans or whatever, immigrant, you might have a hard time with this particular guy. We'll have to see. We'll have to see if there are like complaints that start getting filed on this guy's homophobia. But what about Mayor Adams' homophobia? That's not working out so well, I think. We'll see what happens.
Gee, what about the separation of church and state? How can there be like a faith-based appointment for the city?
Yeah, that's how stuff goes, you know? It's supposed to be a separation of church and state, but various people have their organized superstition being predominant, and so they don't pay a lot of attention to that sometimes. We live, of course, in a highly technological society, and some people, because things are made so easy, and they're made easy by people who work very hard to make them easy to the average person. Deep down inside, of course, these things are very complex. Well, sometimes people think that because it's so easy for them that they know what they're doing with more complicated things. And it turns out they don't. The French version of the Federal Communications Commission had received complaints from people in the French town of Messanger, I think you would call it, Messanger. They had received complaints from people in that town that their internet and phone service was being messed up very badly from midnight to roughly about 3 o'clock in the morning every day. So that's a sort of an odd thing. And you would expect interference to happen, like somebody's running a generator or something, and you would expect it to happen during business hours. And you can say, somebody's running something and it's messing up internet and phone service for some people. But midnight to 3 a.m., they were puzzled. So they got enough complaints that the French authorities investigated. They sent a guy out with a little machine that analyzes signals, and he went walking the streets in the wee hours of the morning. And he did this for a bit, and he did that at Messanger. And the investigation found that a signal jammer was being used in a neighboring town. A signal jammer basically puts out noise on particular frequencies. And so you can see this with a signal analyzer. It has a very distinct waveform and shape. And you say, that's a signal jammer I'm seeing there. And so this guy was walking around and he followed, where the signal was getting stronger and stronger. And he ended up in a neighboring town. The guy who lived in the house that was pinpointed as the source of the interference admitted that he had purchased a multi-band jammer to prevent his teenage children from going online at night without permission. Yeah, daddy doesn't want you going on there at night, so he's going to stop you. And so he had it set up to automatically turn on at midnight and stay on for 3 hours. I guess he figured the kids would, give up by 3 o'clock in the morning. And so he did this, and it messed up an entire nearby town, probably and also his own town. Well, using a jammer is illegal in France, as it is in just about every place else. I think it's required to be illegal everywhere because there are international agreements for things. And, jammers, things that interfere with the radio spectrum, they're internationally supposed to be banned. Of course, they're banned by each individual country, but there are international telecommunications organizations, and their thing is, we should all ban this kind of crap because, you know, it messes things up. Anyway, so since it's illegal to do that in France, as in other places, the guy who had jammers set up is now facing a fine of 30,000 euros and up to 6 months in prison. God, talk about a provincial attitude in more ways than one. And, you know, the idea, oh, my kid, I got to stop my kids from this. I'll turn this thing on. And it's this broadband interference that's jamming stuff in apparently multiple towns. And again, people think, oh, well, this is so easy to do. You know, you set it and you turn it, you know, and to turn on at a certain time, just plug it in, set it, and that's it. It will do it every night the way I want it to do. And not thinking about what is it actually doing? And how far could this go? And, you know, people who find it easy to do but are ignorant of what's actually happening. And there's a lot of that in this technological world these days.
Boy, his kids are going to have 6 months of unfettered internet access now.
Well, who knows if he's actually going to go to prison for it. But and, you know, the fine is up to 30,000 euros, so he might not be fined that much. But he should at least face a decent fine. And, you know, of course, they confiscate it. I think probably by now the kids can do what they want because the first thing they would do would be to confiscate something like that since it is illegal. Jesus Christ, people do this kind of thing. It's, when you're listening to certain radio stations, you're getting, the calls from various taxi cabs and car services coming in over the air, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. All the time.
Yeah, so we have things going on here that are illegal, too. God damn. And as we also know, WBAI is getting its signal interfered with by certain people in Brooklyn. And Jesus H. Christ, that is bad news.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
There's a new Gallup poll out, and it finds that American adults who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, etc., that number has doubled in the past 10 years. And the Gallup poll shows that of all the people polled, 7.1% were not heterosexual. And, yeah, well, that includes, you know, as LGBT plus infinity, as I put it, 7.1%, and that LGBT plus infinity is not heterosexual. And so, gee whiz, that's interesting to hear, and it's not too different from what we were saying more than 50 years ago. And this is up from 5.6% last year, and it's considerably up. It's double the 3.5% who said they were not heterosexual in 2012. And it turns out that, predictably, I suppose, a lot of this is age-based because the Gen Z people born between 1997 and 2003, which gives them, that's a tiny space there. I don't know. This is what it says in the article I read. I don't know if Gen Z is quite that restricted, but okay, whatever it is. 21% of them identify as non-heterosexual. And at the other extreme, people born before 1946 less than 1% of them identify as LGBT plus infinity. And I certainly understand that. I was born right after that. I wasn't born before 1946. I was born after 1946. I'm a boomer. And so, gee whiz, that's certainly something that fits in with what my experience was as a gay activist. And the article says that half of the people surveyed who said they were not heterosexual, half of them identified as bisexual, which is what people classify me as, I guess. I don't know. I still like the idea that I'm gay, but I also like women. But it was, you know, other people don't like that designation. And it turns out that this means that about 4% of all adults in the United States are bisexual, which, you know, isn't overwhelming or anything, but which is certainly a definite bunch of people, a good enough sized minority. And the projection is that, of course, 7.1% are saying they're not heterosexual now. And given the trend, they're saying it'll probably be greater than 10% in the future. And this was one of the things we had done years ago. People had done surveys, and we were quoting, you know, about 10% of people are gay, as we put it in those days, which included gay, lesbian, bisexual. It included everybody back then. And we were saying that then. And some other surveys that had been done sort of surreptitiously, because this one, they called up people on the phone, Gallup. Okay, you can maybe get people to do that now, but back in the old days, you had to do a rather surreptitious polling. But this fits in with our 10% of those days. I'll also note there was a book written by a guy named Stern in the 60s called The Sixth Man. His claim was somewhat wishy-washy on the sides, but one man in six had engaged in homosexual behavior or was doing it or something like that. But our claim as a Gay Activist Alliance and other gay groups in those days was we are about 10%, and it's looking like we're going to hit that. I don't think that the percentage of people is actually up. I think it's the percentage of people who are willing to say what their sexual orientation is. And that's a good thing, I think. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back here next week. Coming up is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
And we're going to get some more weather through this week, but the sunlight is going to get a bit better. We're in late winter, and you should enjoy that later sunset time and all of that. And above all, remember what that lad to be part of a growing minority Dormouse said. Thank you.
opens the door, he's got that look on his face, and he asks you where you've been. You tell him you've seen, and you talk about anything. He's got this dream about buying some land. He's gonna give up the booze and the one-night stands, and then he'll settle down.
Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi. God damn!
Tune in to WBAI Playhouse Saturday, 8 p.m., February 19th, for Natalia Trethewey's Pulitzer Prize-winning elegy, Native Guard, followed by an Olivia Award-winning play, Mountaintop, by Katori Hall.
God...
It imagines an encounter between Dr. King and a mysterious woman set in the Lorraine Motel in Memphis.
It's, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Oh, yeah. Michael, to you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Is she?
Black? Mm-hmm. And proud.
That's The Mountaintop, preceded by Native Guard, WBAI Playhouse, 8 p.m., February 19th, on listener-sponsored non-commercial, WBAI New York.
Children, this is Reverend Billy from the Church of Stop Shopping. You're listening to WBAI FM 99.5, New York City. It's listener-sponsored, children. It's commercial-free. Ooh, change-a-looyah.
Is this where I sign up to get my medical oregano?
You don't have to sign up for medical oregano.
I don't need a medical oregano card.
The medicinal properties of oregano are well known.
I know. I heard it on WBAI.
Even so, my brother was unable to speak, could not walk. We gave him oregano.
And it cured him?
First he started to crawl.
Oh.
Then he sort of toddled.
Could he say anything?
He said da-da.
Oh.
Then mama. And then he went off to kindergarten.
And you owe it all to oregano.
No, we owe it all to WBAI.
Well, what about the oregano?
We put it on his pizza.
If you owe it all to WBAI, make sure to keep your membership current. For only $25 a year, you will enjoy all the privileges of membership, including the right to vote in WBAI's democratically run elections. And don't forget to sprinkle some oregano on your pizza.
WBAI accepts snowmobiles. If you have a snowmobile, we want it. We also want any extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
Hi, this is Jerry Stiller. You are listening.